Welcome, everybody, to Mokya or Mokna, a Mocha podcast featuring your hosts, Max Cohen and Colborn Bell. It is a beautiful, sunny, bird-chirping day here in Brooklyn, New York at 11:14 a.m. on a Sunday. Colborn, how you doing?
Oh, you have me really excited. I was just getting around to this sunshine, beautiful day, but I'm ready to power through this podcast and go hit the mean streets of Kingston.
Yeah, we are getting this done early so we can go spend the day outside. I hope that you also spent the day outside if it was nice out in your locale. But anyways, let's stay inside for a moment and talk about
I gotta say real quick, the best time in New York City is like that first spring day when everybody's been locked up and cooped up and they just like jump outside. So I hope that's your day today, Max.
When I used to live in Boston, it was like, it's the same exact thing, but a little bit later in the season, a little bit worse because it's so cold, so bitter. And that first day comes so suddenly. And yeah, everything's like just alive. People are happy. Everyone's like asking you how you're doing on the street. It's very exciting.
Yeah.
So yeah, so let's get right into it. Okay. For those of you who have not joined us for a Mokya or Mokna, which is probably a lot of people considering this is only our second Mokya Mokna, we're just going to go through some of the big events, topics, conflicts that have happened in crypto art and crypto at large over the last, let's say, week or 2 weeks or so. We're going to talk about them. We're going to rate them a Mokya or Mokna. Does our scale have any logic to it? Not really. Does it really matter whether we Mokya or Mokna? Kinda. So let's just go.
How's that sound? Like the Jim Carrey show. No, it's not Jim Carrey. Drew Carey. Whose line is it anyways? Where everything's made up and the points don't matter.
Yeah, exactly. We're just here to have fun and talk about crypto art. So let's do that. Colborn, I got a couple of topics for you today, and then we're going to end off with a nice little debate about finance, which don't we both love?
Don't get me so excited.
I know. Got to keep you around for something. Let's start with the first Mokya or Mokna of the week, and I would love to know your opinion on this because I thought it was well worth a discussion. So Mokya or Mokna, Colborn, the, I guess, Twitter user, I don't know, we'll call him Schlams. Schlams, a couple weeks back, sent the internet into an absolute panic by posting a picture of a perceived email from Google saying they were sunsetting Gmail. It sparked a lot of outrage and a lot of panic, and it caused even the official Gmail account to say that we are here to stay. And I don't know if it happened on the back end or if it was intentional from the beginning, but Schlams posited this as a kind of like conceptual performance art. He minted that piece on Ethereum, and it sold for, I think, 9.6 ETH. Mm-hmm. Interesting with a little bit of hindsight to look back on what was a pretty, to me, powerful evocation of the fact that everything on the internet is unbelievable these days, and it's only going to get worse. But I am curious, in your opinion, Colborn Bell, was Schlams' Sunset Gmail piece a Mokya or a Mokna?
Yeah, this is probably a big Mokya for me. This is a big Mokya for me. You know, the reason why this piece is so powerful is because all of us are so tied to Gmail.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of us maybe remember the days when there was like a more egalitarian, decentralized internet, but now the funnels push you really through two or three companies. Mm-hmm. You know, Google has been hit super hard this week. Whether it was criticism over like the wokeness of their AI bot into this, since there's inherent tension in the centralization of these corporate entities. So I don't know. I never know what Schlams' point really is, but I always enjoy the performance.
For sure. And I think just the fact that like it makes you consider things like centralization on one hand, right? The fact that like a small little bit of news can spiral outwards just because of the massive impact it has on so many people, even peripherally to their lives. I mean, I have like 5 email accounts and they would all shut down if Gmail were to shut down, which just goes to show the fact that like we have all these tethers to, you know, like the big fan companies basically. And it's really, really hard to like consider life without them. A, and then B, like just the fact that information is so unverifiable that we really only have these like or at least momentarily, the way information spreads on Twitter, that we have, I guess this is also centralization, right? Centralization of influence and knowledge, that we have people who have a couple million followers, and if they tweet out something that looks semi-legitimate or seems to be posited with real confidence, it's really hard to disprove that information right off the bat.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot baked into that. I think we're going to have a wild bananas 2024 political season in America.
Yeah. I mean, if this is any example, it's kind of amazing to me, because you think about it for a second, right? Of course, Gmail wouldn't be sunsetting. It's the most widely used and probably most profitable email service in the world. It ties together, I would say, probably a greater than 50% share of
I'm gonna say right off the gate, it's probably not profitable. All it is just like a data mining center.
Well, yeah, but even so, like, it's profitable on the back end. They wouldn't be, Gmail would not be,
Google is profitable.
Yeah, Google is profitable, and Gmail wouldn't have the impact and user base that it has if the company itself didn't have some very good economic reason for continuing it.
Yeah,
but like, again, you look into this information for a second, and you start to, it starts to seem ridiculous, but it's like, I don't know. The point of this performance to me is capturing that hair trigger moment, right? Mm-hmm. That like, you see the information, your logic centers haven't kicked in. You have not started considering it from all angles. And you just kind of feel that either elation or that kind of deep, like, panic nervousness when something is being presented to you. And I think that that is what we are going to see so much going forward, because I think, especially to people in crypto art, especially to people who are going to be literate on this kind of like new AI boom of deep fakes and Sora videos, etc., there's going to be that after a moment, that kicking in of like, okay, is this real? Is this legitimate? What are the tells? What are people saying? How can I prove this, verify this, etc.? But you have that moment where the information is first presented to you, where you have an initial powerful emotional reaction. And that's going to be constant. And that's going to be, I think, really detrimental to a lot of people's online experience.
Yeah, like fault line, critical fault line trigger points of existence. And maybe I can segue us out of here with a story. But when I touched down in Paris for NFT Paris was exactly when there was that massive AT&T network outage.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I'm sitting here basically with like a bricked iPhone in a foreign country being like, okay, you know, with, you know, 6-7 hours to kill. And, you know, I kind of just ventured out into the streets of Paris and knew that it would be totally, totally fine. But, you know, we have to certainly be aware of the critical fault dependencies in our life and, you know, how we will, if we have like the mental flexibility to adapt in the moment, if these things do disappear.
Yeah. I guess you can never know at any given moment. Like, it's important to, maybe it's even vital to like identify those pain points in your life, right? Where are you connected to like A, B, C, or D super centralized giant corporate entity?
Yeah.
You know, it's like every time Amazon Web Services has a disruption, like half of the internet goes down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's all held on those servers.
Right.
I'm glad you segued into NFT Paris, because I wanted to get your opinion on that. You know, you spent a couple days there. It seems like a lot of people in the crypto art landscape were in NFT Paris. Definitely seems like the most publicity came out of that event since at least NFT NYC last year, in terms of like conferences, get togethers, international collaborations. So I'm curious, like, boots on the ground, NFT Paris, Mokyar or Mokna?
Major Mokyar. I actually, you know, I wasn't really planning on going, and then I kind of FOMO'd in at the last minute, and I couldn't be more grateful that I did. It was certainly maybe like 80% smaller than last year, which made it like four times more accessible.
Sure.
Yeah. So, you know, really intimate, you know, friends as family, this community at the end of a bear market, kind of reinvigorated and exciting. You know, nobody really knows, of course, what's coming next. And people are certainly tired and probably really like fed up. but there's just an intimacy of the experience that can only be shared by the people in the experience. And, you know, I was talking with Die With The Most Likes. It's unfathomable to think that you could be anywhere else but here, because this is just like the most, in my mind, dynamic and interesting space as like AI and blockchain converge. And we really like lean into the artists, we lean into the creators, the builders, to help bring light to where we're going as humans in the face of all this. Mm. And there's such brilliant minds, and the conversations are so deep. I want to, you know, specifically shout out Agoria, who played an insane set at the Musée d'Orsay, in which people were like raving next to, you know, 16th century marble statues, iron statues. They had the museum like open and illuminated.
That seems dangerous.
Yeah, it was great. It was just so great. I can't even begin to think of the, I don't even know where it would be possible, but they did it and it was beautiful and I'm sure nothing broke and, you know, everybody had a great time.
The insurance on that party must have been absolutely nuts.
Well, I don't know. You know, they have probably great insurance.
I have to hope.
Yeah. Museum grade insurance.
That was where I felt the most FOMO, was looking at that event, right? Like, because that's, yeah, still,
that
like,
was a banger. That just like, those are, you know, kind of like the Sandbox rave at the Lisbon. What is it? Oh my gosh, like Biodome.
Okay.
That was crazy too. That was like out of control.
I feel like the marker of these positive like conferences and events is like, was there one kind of legendary rave set somewhere in like a location you wouldn't expect?
Yeah. I mean, the Bright Moments party was, that went too hard for me. That was very like, you know, underground Berlin. And that was great, but I was too tired.
It's funny to compare this to something like the famous like Ape Fest UV light debacle, which sure. I'm sure people saw pictures of, just in the sense that like when CryptoWord is doing its thing, when it's on its full, like when the part people involved are like fully creative and fully inspired and fully like energized, you can really create like these really unique and creative experiences that are so like you said, you use the perfect word, like dynamic, and how they're put on and like the intention behind them and like what kinds of culture they're like bringing together. Did you feel like, you know, this get together, I don't even know what to call it, I guess conference at NFT Paris, was markedly different from some of the other ones you went to over the last, like, say, 6 months or so?
Oh, well, 6 months, have I been anywhere?
Years, though.
Yeah, I don't, each one has its own flavor, and Paris is such a wonderful host. Mm. And the people there are just incredible. And I've consistently find, no shade America, but like the European events and the European people and the European sensibility toward arts and culture to be so much more inviting and welcoming and meaningful, generally, than like the interactions that happen elsewhere. And the, you know, the core, the heart, I think it sits there. And, you know, that's incredibly compelling for me. You know, there was also obviously the release of the What the Punk documentary. I went to the Punks brunch. That group is still like super, super energized, especially at a time, you know, when Yuga's reshuffling and trying to figure out what's going on. But there is something really, again, like core to that community, which makes everything feel like it has a longer duration, a longer timeline than what you experience on Twitter X, on the other timeline, on the shorter timeline. And then the Tashin book as well. So there were these moments of kind of like celebrated history, which felt very nice to acknowledge kind of like the thing that was done and that was cemented, and like we did it and we don't really know what's next, but we did it.
You just hit on something that I think is really, really important, which is that we seem to be having a cultural moment of reckoning with history. Mm-hmm. And that's appeared in a couple ways. We're going to return to the Tashin book as the kind of conversation topic that I want to get into. But I do think it's interesting because I keep seeing, especially as the money starts to flow in from institutional actors, and obviously like Bitcoin, Ethereum, Solana, all these coins are like up quite a lot, especially from what they were a couple months ago. And there seems to be like a general, seems to be an accepted, like, okay, we might actually be in the beginning of a bull market. I see a lot of just various people talking about what they think that, I hate to use the terminology winners, but what they think the quote unquote like winners of the NFT world will be looking forward. There are people who are kind of like placing their bets, so to speak. And the things that I keep seeing are things like Xcopy, One of Ones, Squiggles, Punks. The reason that I bring that up is just because it seems like the financial side of crypto is starting to look towards what is actually going to have significant historical provenance. And we have a couple topics coming up between the Tashin book and Moro Collective's Revolutionaries, where it just seems like we're having, at least for a couple weeks, this moment where people are reckoning with history in a really profound way. Let's jump from there into the Tashin book, which I believe you were at the launch of. The Tashin book is a giant crypto art, the first major crypto art survey, crypto art historical survey is what they call it, curated by Robert Alice, the artist and curator. I think that the discourse around the Tashin book has quieted slightly, but certainly when it released at NFT Paris, there was an incredible amount of conflicted emotions. I wrote about it for our Dear Mocha column on our Substack, museumofcrypto.substack.com. Please give that a follow if you haven't. But the nature of trying to draw out the history of the space is such a tenuous task, because any version of history is always going to leave people out. And that was the main conflict of this Tashin book, that it surveyed, I think it was 101 artists who were included, 101 essays written by the people of the artist choice on those artists, plus a series of like contextualizing essays. But again, a lot of celebration from the culture at large, a lot of celebration from the people who were involved in the book, who were included in the book, and a lot of sadness from people who were not. So I'm curious, you know, this is obviously a big topic, maybe too big for a simple Mokya Mokna, but what is your feeling on that conflict? Where do you stand on the Tashin book coming out and proclaiming itself like a major study of NFTs, and then the vitriol that followed?
Undeniably, it was. There's no denying that. Of course, in any list, we see it every time, not everybody is going to be included. Right. I think really the museum stands alone in trying to celebrate like everybody that was there at that time. And we will take any piece from any artist who minted prior to December 2020. And we can do that because we exist in the digital. The Tashin book is obviously in the physical. I saw it. It's giant. It's massive. I know how hard Robert Alice worked on it. So I have a lot of empathy and think it deserves, you know, a major round of applause. You know, if you don't like something, everybody is, of course, welcome to go and do their own version of that. The fact of the matter is, you know, it took years and years to get done, probably thousands of legal waivers and, you know, the things I signed. I, of course, am biased because, you know, I wrote the Dada essay and the museum is in it. And I get people complaining online. I get people fighting for their space in history. But, you know, there is no way to, I don't know. You know, I was kind of thinking this earlier, and maybe it's the wrong thing to say out loud, but I'm going to say it anyways. But we really can be a bit of a whiny bunch. And it's like every single thing that happens, we just have to throw a temper tantrum around. The level of crypto art drama is generally intensely really, really high, when, you know, you can either like make art about it, or you can go release a book, or you can go, you know, there's a million options to be proactive. I don't think it is very self-serving to like get on the internet and just complain.
Yeah. Although, of course, that's the reaction, right? Like, especially a lot of the people whose voices I saw the loudest and whose disappointment was the loudest. I mean, it is pretty painful, I have to imagine, like being here for 5, 6, 4 years, however long it is, and building towards this thing and making these connections and creating art and like striving. And, you know, I just think it's such a natural human reaction to like be massively disappointed when, again, like something positing itself as like the first major historical survey of crypto art that is getting so much love still kind of leaves you to the wayside. You know, I just, it's so human. I don't know if it's just a crypto art thing as much as it's just a human thing that we happen to have the communication network to, or like the hair trigger communication network necessary to like announce one's feelings immediately. Like I totally get it.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, it's just like a giant paperweight that sits, you know, on the table of generally like the, I don't know, you know, I don't want to be, but these things, you know, how many people are going to open it and read it? And really not so many. You're going to probably touch more with like a single tweet.
Probably. But this is also the limits of anything physical. I think you hit on something that's really pertinent, which is like the digitally native art movement. Anything that's not digital is going to obviously run into aspects of its creation that are counterintuitive to the thing itself. So any kind of limited physical creation, you know, I wrote this in the column, but like there's 101 artists involved. Artists 102, 103, and 104 are going to suffer the same fate necessarily as, you know, no name, no talent artists who may have just entered the space, you know, last week, right? That's just the unfortunate reality of anything with a limit, is there's a cutoff point at a certain moment. You know, and it applies to everything.
Look, there is not enough recognition in the world to honor everybody's time and commitment. And things in the same way get very centralized. They get, light gets shown on the same people again and again. And those people become like kind of, you know, they become the face.
Yeah.
And that is, it's irrational. And who knows how those decisions are made. And I don't know.
Do you think we're going to see people, especially kind of some of these more storied artists who were not included in the book, do you think we're going to see people like turn away from crypto art because their lack of recognition? Like, do you think it's a real possibility?
I don't. I think generally those energies encourage people to double down. Because again, there's no other place to be in this world, in my opinion. And once you're in, and once you're plugged in, once you know the players, it's, you know, the most interesting modern day soap opera, like plus reality show that could ever possibly exist.
Yeah.
We're really in the limits of frontier technology, pushing, prodding, asking all of the pertinent questions to what it means to be human in a society that is, you know, rapidly progressing to like both an economic and intelligence singularity.
Yeah, well said. You know, the same kind of debate has popped up in the last couple of days because the Morrow Collective released a pretty large scale project, which you can see in the metaverse on CryptoVoxels, which I appreciate, called Revolutionaries, which was unveiled at Art Dubai, I guess 2 days or so ago. They say it as it features historic and contemporary pieces from visionary artists who pioneered blockchain art in 2014, yada, yada, yada. It's broken up into a couple sections, people who minted around 2014 and then people who minted from 2015 to 2023. Like the Tashin book, a lot of people were rubbed the wrong way by any given person's version of history that either left them out or left out other actors. I know that like one that I deeply felt was they were talking about the royalty debate in 2020 and left out Sparrow Reed, blackbox.art, which seemed like an egregious omission considering how important Sparrow Reed was in helping to put together the letter to Super Rare in 2020 that helped preserve 10% royalties as opposed to the 3% that they had tried to kind of take everything down to. And, you know, you see these very kind of public and very kind of obvious exclusions. And of course, it's going to enervate the like underlying message and all the work that went into the thing initially. But again, like I don't see an alternative to this because everyone's going to have a blind spot. So the alternative is either like we completely decentralize the way we, you know, consider history, which I hope we do by using the blockchain in the future as like our preeminent historical record, as opposed to a book, performance, a exhibition, etc. But if people are going to put something together, people are always going to be mistaken, right? Like I feel like, I personally feel it is, although very human, wrong to denigrate the people, these curators who are putting a lot of time and effort into coming up with some version of history, who are caring at least somewhat about the history of the space, by paying attention to their exclusions more than you're paying attention to the many, many people that they include.
Yeah, I mean, I want to shout out the whole Morrow team, you know, and Dave in particular, who I know has done thousands and thousands of hours of research. And there are people that came after me who have certainly gone much deeper than me into the history. And, you know, these people in my mind are real treasures of the space. You know, people like Jedi Wolf, for example, who continues to like do incredible discovery and write really interesting, deep threads and just share that information. But back to the point is that, you know, at the end of the day, a curator's job is to like take all of the available information set that they can discover on their own, because sometimes they were there, sometimes they weren't there, package it, and then sell it at a festival like Art Dubai. So of course, like 99.9% of that is going to be omitted, and there's going to be a ton of storytelling happening. And I think they did a fantastic job. You know, they pulled out names, you know, I don't want to get into that part of it, but they pulled out names and work and things that were unknown to myself. And there are artists, especially in the early years, that did not like get the recognition that they deserve. Mm. You think every year kind of the space did about like a 10x. So there's so few people that actually were there and know what happened in 2014 and 15 and 16 and 17.
Yeah.
You know, just for like example, I got to meet Rhea Myers at NFT Paris, and that is really, you know, it's like really, really rare and special. Somebody that conceptually probed so much depth of this space at such an early time. Kevin was there, McCoy, really, really, really phenomenal. Again, when we think of just like the intimacy and the breadth of how kind of more individualized solo moments or pieces or thinking translates into a movement and carries energy and multiplies and creates these waves. And then to have to go back and like try and put lightning in a bottle, in the essence of what Morrow did for Art Dubai, and what the Tashin book did, it's all like a monumental Herculean task that people who really deeply care are taking it on. So it hurts me a little bit when people get critical of it, mm-hmm. in kind of like me moments. But you know the same, like we've poured so much like love, time, energy into the museum because we believe, and we're like trying to figure out ways to decentralize all of this information and consolidate and write it and share it in something that fits the truth of our experience and our relationships and shared energies. And this is, you know, unfortunately there's a great joy in it, but it's also a bit of a economic and cultural war that happens.
It's just such a tightrope, I feel like, that crypto art is often forced to walk along conceptually, right? Where it has to remember history, but anytime it remembers history, it gets denigrated for not remembering the right history. And like it can't push itself forward without keeping history in mind. But like, again, like just trying to walk that tightrope of remembering and keeping like the past cognizant, keeping the people who built this thing cognizant, but then like being dragged anytime that somebody is left out. It feels unrealistic to me. you know, I hate the I hate the saying of like, oh, well, you don't like this book. Well, you should go write your own book, because like people aren't going to do that naturally. And I don't think it's a fair expectation per se, but it just feels very much like we are expecting far too much of crypto art itself, while and forgetting that crypto art is like made by people, and like artists are going to have blind spots, and writers are going to have blind spots, and historians are going to have blind spots. And it's maybe in the subtext that these things come through. Again, I get all the fear and trepidation of people who are like have been building for many, many years and who fear like being footnotes to history. I think the reality, though, is that like we are all probably going to be footnotes to history, and we have to be a servant to the history itself and to whatever thing here is being built, because the thing itself is more important. It might be communicated by its chosen emissaries, but like, you know, we're not here to achieve individual fame. I mean, that's a great byproduct, but like we have to be here to like push this thing forward, to like try and have some like larger sociocultural effects.
That's also just like right now, you know, you have to assume in the blockchain is the book. So if you haven't put it on chain, then for me, you know, we are going to have autonomous agents going back, scraping, seeing the interaction, seeing, analyzing what led to what. Like these are all real things that happened that can be identified on chain, and it's really not for a human. You know, I'm doing all of this so something larger than any one person can step in and be like, it was this thing that led to this thing that led to this thing. And I really think there will be, you know, autonomous agents that are going to like scrape and study and understand, and then that data will then get taken and interpolated, because now it's all kind of word of mouth. But the fact of the matter is that the information literally lies in the chain, and that is permanent. Yeah, unlike the stories or the histories that we tell.
We can know right now with 100% accuracy, with beyond a shadow of a doubt, every single person who minted an artwork before December of 2020.
Right.
The museum itself may only have, you know, 270 plus, maybe like 280, something like 300. That number just jumped as I was saying it. Only those amount of people represented. But like, again, I think that's a really, really good point, and probably the point that we should end on, that like we can know 100% with absolute certainty who was creating these works and when. And at some point, we have to believe that people who are students of history, the people who are going to be, you know, eventually down the road, 10, 15, 20 years from now, whenever, you know, figuring out who the important actors are here, they will have access to that tome that has 100% accuracy. I do feel that that's somewhat forgiving to a lot of like the current curations. All right. So let's take this first debate and pair it with a second debate, because this is something I want to give a couple of minutes to, because maybe I don't understand it fully in the way that people seem to be, with the vitriol people seem to be arguing about it with. And that is this kind of pricing debate that has reared its head again in the last couple of days. This idea of whether art, crypto art specifically, should be valued in ETH prices kind of consistently or in USD prices. As far as I understand it, that's more to say that like if a work is priced at one ETH when ETH is worth $1,200, should it remain being worth one ETH when ETH is at $3,600? Or is it about the USDC kind of fiat underlying valuation below it? I have seen the arguments on both sides. I would say I'm undecided. Colborn, where do you land initially on this issue? I feel like you would have a pretty good perspective.
I am super, super. The more I think about it, the more adamant that one ETH is one ETH. Mm-hmm. Nobody that is in this space, maybe this is extreme, but I'll say like anybody that is a true crypto artist, everybody is trying to accumulate more crypto.
Yeah.
Nobody is trying to accumulate more dollars. And frankly, I think there's a major cognitive dissonance on where we're going and how scarce these items are going to be. You know, let's just say that theoretically, you know, Bat Soup Yum said, you know, if ETH rises to $100,000, you know, are we still going to price in ETH? And my answer is absolutely yes, because one, suddenly, Ethereum is now as ubiquitous and as precious and large as the entire gold market, right? So
$100,000, that's what it needs to get to.
Yeah, that makes it about $12 trillion market cap. Gold is about a $14 trillion market cap. I did this whole thing last night trying to think about this. And if it is as ubiquitous and as precious as something like gold is today, well, then very easily, I think, the things that were minted first, the first cultural artifacts, maybe they sold for, you know, 0.25 ETH, 1 ETH, you know, are they worth $100,000? In my mind, yes. You know, that's not to say what happens with like the dollar and inflation. And, you know, the fact of the matter is that like the all-time high for Bitcoin might have been $67,000 4 years ago. But today with inflation, that number is $78,000.
Yeah.
Right. So we don't think about like this invisible weight of inflation that we're carrying and what it means to transfer from like this asset that continues to get highly inflated, where the incentive is to continue to inflate into real hard money again.
There's a cognitive dissonance at play too, because I think that everyone here believes in the power of cryptocurrency, A, and B, believes that like cryptocurrency will rise to the level of like cultural ubiquity, like you said, and financial ubiquity. And it's weird to see people who like believe very strongly even in the bear market, right? When ETH was at what, $1,200, $1,300, you know, the belief, I would say 100%, or at least that's what they're public positing is that ETH is going to rise again, right? Of course it's going to go to 4,000. Of course it's going to go to 6,000. Of course it's going to go to 10,000. And then now that it's actually achieving those gains, now there's this disconnect where like, oh, we should rein it back in.
Yeah, this is like classic artist self-defeating. Like if your work was worth $3,000 4 years ago and now it's worth $6,000, really that's, you know, in my mind, that's not so huge. The fact of the matter is that like the volatility of the asset will dampen, price levels will achieve some normality. These things will eventually not do such big ups and downs. And you don't think like you're growing over that time to achieve that and you want to continue to like price these things as is, that's fine. We are in, you know, I've said it a lot now, we're in a distribution phase. You should be focused on getting your work in the hands of as many collectors as possible, period. Scarcity comes later when crypto takes over, it converges with AI, you know, and that's like 3 or 4 or 5 years down the line. But if ETH is $10,000, $20,000, are you really going to pay $500, $1,000 to mint a work on the chain at that point?
Yeah. I just think it's weird, like this, the way conviction is being played with, right? If you have conviction a year and a half ago that ETH is going to go to $10,000 and you buy an artwork for 1 ETH and you really believe that it could go to $10,000 or that that's like the natural way it's going to go, and today you're trepidatious about buying something for 1 ETH at $3,500, $4,000, whatever ETH is going to be, when people hear this, like there's just a major intellectual disconnect there, because you have valued the underlying asset at the same thing this whole time. You're just trying to get a buck.
Right.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think that like the nature of this movement is built on like this on cryptocurrency. It may not always follow like our logical understanding of valuation, but that's like the name of the game with everything here. Whether it's the, you know, the big cryptos, whether it's meme coins, right? Like valuation itself is constantly changing and our value of things is constantly changing. And like, especially as somebody like myself who has, you know, traded so many shit PFP projects in my day, like there is a lot worthy of comment in how we perceive something's value. Something that, you know, when it's worth, let's say I buy something, I mint something at 2 Solana and it goes up to 10 Solana. Right? I'm not fucking selling that. And nobody is, because they believe that it can go to 20. The value of the thing changes immediately in illogical and irrational ways, but it's all tied to like the underlying metric of the thing. We don't value anything in crypto based on its underlying USD, except when we're like looking at charts and, you know, celebrating the fact that like the alien punk, whatever, got a 4,250 ETH bid. Today, that's 14 million. Tomorrow, it could be 28 million. Like it's always,
but there's only 9 of those in the world. And the fact of the matter is like ultimately these things are priceless.
Sure. But we don't judge them in the valuation. We're not saying, wow, that's worth, you know, $14 million. Or we might say, wow, it's worth $14 million. But like, if you're getting, if you're selling one of these priceless punks for 4,200 ETH, it's because you value future ETH as more than what the like underlying USD of the thing is. You would rather have 4,250 ETH than you'd rather have $14 million in USD because you have conviction. I have to assume if you're holding a alien CryptoPunk in the underlying price of the thing itself. So how do you marry the like conviction and future valuation with, you know, current prices? I think the only way to do that is just to ignore the USD or fiat price of the thing altogether. Mm-hmm. Because again, like that's the bet we have all made here. That's why we accumulate Ethereum. That's why we buy Bitcoin and like lust after Bitcoin. It's like why we bet on meme coins, because we know that the valuation is so radically departured from any kind of rational analogy that we have in our physical reality.
We have evolved for tens of thousands of years to think incrementally, to like, you know, be very process oriented, to not think too far into the future. The fact of the matter is, you know, for not the first time, but we are rapidly running up an exponential technology curve that will completely change humanity as we know it, to the point where I think people that have access to like future tools in our lifetime will be on a completely divergent, like transhumanist human evolutionary path, where these people are like merging with machines to be able to process and facilitate data on an exponential level, as opposed to kind of the Darwin evolution that we know, which is drawn out over significant periods of time. So, you know, as these people move this way, as they move more into the digital, as there is this fusion, you know, artificial intelligence and blockchain follow that, and those become like the underpinnings of this culture. So, you know, it's hard to think in exponential terms, but really, like, the difference between $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 is so small compared to, you know, the probable exponential leaps of what it means, I think, for all of these assets to go from $3,000 to $30,000 to $300,000.
I want to end on a thought experiment question for you. If I sell, let's say we mint the recording of this podcast and we sell it for one ETH, right? And we have that ETH, and we've sold this podcast for, let's say, $3,400, whatever ETH is at. If it goes to $100,000 a year from now, do we get to say that we sold this podcast for $100,000?
I just don't. I think there is a lot of mental gymnastics around what it means to hold a dollar, because what if the U.S. enters like hyperinflation? Hmm. You know, every day the dollar is worth less and less and less, right? And over the past 100 years, purchasing power has been reduced by 98%, right? And we got off the gold standard and we got off any hard money thing. So what does that mean? You know, there is also this great misconception that $1 equals $1, and that, you know, all of this global participatory thing is going to continue to be denominated in the US dollar. Mm-hmm. I get people need to, you know, like survive and pay bills, and, you know, but there's something, I don't know, you know, there's an inherent tension between where we're going, how we get there, and then like short-term necessities.
It's a fascinating conversation. I hope we have it in the future. I don't know. I want to see how this develops. I wonder if this conversation develops into a conclusion culturally. I doubt it, but
no, there's just an inevitability, right? It's slow, 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 and then all at once, right? And then suddenly everybody is piling into every pre-2020 NFT and artist, right? Because that is just the de facto standard, that everything online is tokenized, that, you know, creative autonomous agents have taken over the internet. We don't know what comes from humans. You know, there's people that have been positioned and positive as real artists. And not only are those people suddenly desirable to, you know, all of the humans in the world, because we have such an abundance of creation and capital from technological innovation. But also all of those autonomous agents are going to be desiring these things as well. And they're going to be competing against each other, and they're going to be working online to earn cryptocurrency.
Man, that first day that an AI, like completely of its own volition, buys an artwork.
Yeah.
I hope we should
make like the Botto for collectors.
Interesting.
Yeah. Whoever wants to work on that.
Yeah, hit us up.
Hit us up in the DM.
We should get out of here. I do just want to mention before we go that today is the 2-year anniversary of A Lot of Money's passing. And I just wanted to give a shout out. Maybe not a shout out, but that's the wrong word. But just wanted everyone to take a moment, if they haven't looked at A Lot of Money's work today, to give it a look, to keep him and his very important memory in your thoughts, because that's one of the best to ever do it, and a really, really important figure in this whole movement. So just wanted to mention that before we left.
Rest in peace, A Lot of Money. The art is crypto art. Super poignant, super satirical, very, very funny, good humored.
Completely inimitable.
Yeah, really. There's nothing else out there like it. From, you know, the memes that he was doing in 2017 to the Twitter banners, to watch the evolution from there to like these glorious one of ones. If you were lucky enough to know him, he was a North Star in the space. And that is, you know, somebody that I hope we just continue to recognize, celebrate, admire the art, share, showcase, and just like let that shine for what the early space was all about, how people can be in the future, what it means to be a crypto artist. And we just learn and grow from people like that.
Well said. All right, Colborn, let's get out of here. If you enjoyed today's podcast, and we certainly hope you did, you can give us a follow or a subscribe on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts so that you do not miss another episode and you don't have to worry about Twitter's terrible algorithm letting you know when one of these podcasts has come into being. If you want to have the same principle applied to the writing that you get, you should follow us at museumofcrypto.substack.com. We have 2 weekly columns going out. One, a little intellectual discussion on what's going on in the space. One, all the information you need to know for the week. That would be our Mocha Weekly. That is coming out, our first one, later today. And we'll have that at you every Sunday. So please check us out over there. This is a fun podcast, Colborn. I really appreciate all your insight, as always. And I appreciate everybody being here. We hope to see you again real soon.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Max.
Bye-bye. This has been another episode of Current Events with Max and Colborn. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Colborn, as always, for being my co-host. Our intro music was composed by Julian Brangold, so a big thank you to him. And once again, thank you to all of you for being with us.